Iran reacts to the U.S. president's latest comments about global oil supply, saying Washington has failed to remove Tehran from the international market. The European Union says it will impose fresh sanctions against Belarus amid mounting tensions over a migrant crisis along their borders. And official data shows Japanese economy contracted faster than expected in the third quarter this year amid the coronavirus pandemic. Hey everyone, welcome to World News here in the Iranian capital. I'm your host, Behzad Safi. Good to have you with us. Now, starting with our top story, Iran saying that the United States has tried for decades to remove the country from the international market, but it has failed to do so.
What Biden said indicates that no country can be eliminated from the international market. For decades, the Americans have tried to remove Iran from the global markets, but they have failed to do so due to the creativity of our youths who have overcome all obstacles.
Iran's foreign ministry spokesman says that the U.S. president has to be aware that Tehran is carefully monitoring his behavior. Said Hadizadeh says Tehran will go to the upcoming talks for removal of the sanctions with an eye on Joe Biden's actions and comments. Now, the talks are scheduled to be held in Vienna on November 29th. On Friday, Biden said that there are sufficient supplies of petroleum worldwide so other countries can cut their purchases from Iran. And that's part of a policy that requires the White House to affirm every 6 months that there is enough oil supply globally to maintain sanctions against Iran. The Islamic Republic argues that the sanctions are illegal. Writer and political analyst John White says that the exploitive nature of U.S. relations with other countries is pushing the world toward the East.
Necessity dictates that the U.S. dollar should not be seen as a viable, as a secure and stable international currency, given the vicissitudes of Washington when it comes to its relations with all the countries and the powers in the region. So that it is pushing the world towards an Eastern resolve when it comes to dealing with the West. The West is no longer the only game in town. It had been from the demise of the Soviet Union in the early 1990s, but things have changed and changed utterly. So the world is looking to the East increasingly. China's Belt and Road Initiative is knitting vast swathes of the world together in a spirit of cooperation and mutual benefit. Whereas Washington is trying to still play by the old playbook of our game is the only game in town, and when we say jump, you say how high. This is no longer reality in the world.
Now, the Iranian foreign minister has called for expansion of ties with Turkey, saying that partial agreement has been reached on long-term cooperation. Hossein Amir Abdullahi said the two sides agreed to finalize a roadmap for long-term collaboration during a planned visit by Turkish President to Iran. Amir Abdullahian made the announcement in a presser after meeting with his Turkish counterpart in Tehran. The top diplomat said that they also agreed in mechanisms to speed up expansion of ties and remove obstacles to trade. Mevlut Çavuşoğlu also confirmed that they've reached an agreement on a framework to boost their relations, including in the area of trade. He also called for removal of U.S. sanctions on Iran, added that Ankara welcomes the resumption of talks to revive the Iran nuclear deal. Clerics from several Muslim countries have held a virtual conference to discuss the situation in Afghanistan following its takeover by the Taliban. Participants touched upon several issues, including the formation of an all-inclusive government in Afghanistan. We have a report from Kabul.
On Sunday, the Afghan capital Kabul hosted a webinar titled Muslim World Ulamas and the recent developments in Afghanistan. Top clerics from seven Islamic countries, namely Afghanistan, India, Pakistan, Iran, Palestine, Iraq, and Croatia, participated in the event. They said the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan opened a new chapter in the country, adding that it's up to the new rulers to form an inclusive government and maintain stability.
Afghans are proud people. They succeeded to defeat the U.S. and its allies and free their country. We hope the new administration learns from the past and understands that no one can rule over Afghanistan with dictatorship and oppression. I think Afghanistan must have a popular and inclusive government in order to prevent disputes.
We welcome the recent developments in our country, as it is meant to cease hostilities and violence on our soil. We are happy that our people don't hear the news of war every day, or at least hear lesser than they did during the invasion. But the fact is that recent terrorist attacks show that we are still far from permanent security and peace.
The attendees also stressed the need for Islamic solidarity and urged the Taliban and Afghans to stay awake and knowledgeable to foil enemies' scheme.
My advice to the Afghan people is that they should launch an educational movement and everyone should be illiterate so that they can detect enemies' plots. In addition, there should be a solidarity between Muslim brothers because their enemies are trying to sow sedition between Shias and Sunnis, especially by carrying out deadly attacks.
Addressing the conference, the clerics also urged Islamic countries to help Afghans amid difficulties and economic hardship. The participants of the webinar stressed unity among all Muslims, especially in Afghanistan. This as the Taliban government is yet to be recognized by world countries and people are facing looming crisis. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
The European Union is set to impose fresh sanctions against Belarus as tensions are mounting over a migrant crisis along the borders.
Today we are going to approve a new package of sanctions against Belarusian people responsible for what's happening in the country. And we are going to enlarge the framework in order to think to implement other sanctions to other people, airlines, travel agencies, and everybody involved on this illegal push of migrants in our borders.
The EU foreign policy chief says that he has told the Belarusian foreign minister the situation at the border is completely unacceptable. Josep Borrell was speaking ahead of an EU foreign minister's meeting in Brussels. Now, those comments were echoed by the German foreign minister. Heiko Maas says that the EU is far from the end of the sanctions spiral against Belarus. The bloc has accused Belarus of flying in migrants and pushing them to cross into Poland and other neighboring EU states. Minsk has denied the allegation. There have been warnings of an escalation of tensions, with Poland earlier calling on NATO to take concrete steps to resolve the issue. Belarus has vowed to retaliate against any new sanctions. It says it does not want the crisis to escalate into a conflict. Staying with Europe, British police have arrested three people following a deadly car explosion in the northwestern city of Liverpool. Police saying that the three men, all in their 20s, were detained under the Terrorism Act. They, however, say that they're keeping an open mind about the cause of the explosion. The incident happened just before 11 a.m. local time outside Liverpool Women's Hospital. The passenger of the car, said to be a taxi, died at the scene. But the driver was injured and transported to the hospital. An unconfirmed report suggesting the driver locked the passenger inside the car after noticing explosives. Authorities have launched an investigation. Now for more information, let's go to London. Let's go to Robert Carter, correspondent there. Robert, what do you have for us? Tell us the latest.
Four are expected to give a press conference at 11 a.m. local time, which is just about now. They're going to be updating the public on all the latest details regarding their investigation. What we do know, apart from what you've already mentioned to the audience, is that the British Prime Minister has also commented on the story. He says that he can't release any particular details, specifically in regards to identities of those involved, other than the cab driver, who reports say he did lock his passenger in just moments before the explosion took place. The driver's name is David Perry, and he's being praised as what appears to be heroic action on his part. The media are already jumping to conclusions and are speculating that this is, of course, terror-related, but they're also speculating that it may have something to do with the fact that it was Remembrance Day services taking place during the day, and moments before the explosion took place, very close by that location in Liverpool, there was a major Remembrance Day service taking place, which is an annual event, for people who don't know, to commemorate war dead and those who have died, those militaries, who personnel who have died in past conflicts on behalf of the British state. So the media are very interested to find out if that has something to do with why this potential terrorist attack may have taken place. This is all speculation at this stage, though nothing's been confirmed, and we still do not have the identity of the suspected bomber that died inside the taxi cab confirmed at all. nor do we have the identity of the three men who were arrested. But I dare say that there are many, many pundits out there who are waiting eagerly to find out if there are any references to these potential attackers being perhaps migrants or refugees, for example, being from a Muslim background, potentially. I think if that turns out to be the case, then this will be whipped up into a media circus. If it turns out to be something not related to the so-called extremist Islamist narrative that's peddled by many in the West here, then this could be boiled down to an unfortunate and horrific incident, but then it's likely that the media perspective will go back to normality very soon afterwards. But we're still waiting for all those details.
Okay, so are we. Thanks for that, Robert Carter, our correspondent in London. Now let's take a look at Japan. The economy there has shrunk faster than expected in the third quarter of 2021 as the COVID pandemic hits spending and exports. According to government data, the world's third largest economy shrank by 0.8% in the 3 months to September. That's four times greater than expected and represents an annualized drop of 3%. The slowdown was partially driven by a dip in the consumer spending during a COVID state of emergency in the summer. Supply chain issues also affected the production, hampering trade and exports. Well, on that note, I talked to economic commentator Seijuro Takeshita, says that the real problem of Japan's economy is the lack of procurement agreements that can help meet the country's requirements.
The real problem of the economy, at least at this point, is particularly the procurement side. The capital expenditure dropped quite significantly because we do not have enough goods, particularly the semiconductors. In addition to that, we've also got worries about, you know, rising oil prices and weakening the yen, which would be a double battering for the Japanese economy. But, you know, overall, I can clearly see that, you know, private consumption, which is the biggest component of the GDP, is definitely on its way back, particularly in areas like services.
Now, fear is growing for the lives of five Palestinian prisoners who are on open-ended hunger strikes against their illegal detention in Israeli jails. Two of these prisoners have refused to eat for nearly 100 days. Some of them have already developed critical health conditions. On Thursday, a Palestinian prisoner ended almost 4 months of his hunger strike after the Israeli regime agreed to release him next year. Migdad al-Gawasme was taken to the ICU during his lengthy hunger strike due to his deteriorating condition. Palestinian prisoners say that refusing to eat is their only means of protesting the administrative detention. That's an Israeli policy under which Palestinians are jailed without charge or trial. The hunger strikers are also critical of harsh conditions in jails. The Palestinian Authority is facing a financial crisis. For months, it's been struggling to meet its obligations to contractors while facing continuous difficulty in paying its employees and workers. Mona Kendil has more.
The Palestinian Authority is experiencing the worst fiscal difficulties it has ever had since its establishment more than a quarter century ago. PA officials say this could soon reflect on its ability to pay its employees' salaries and conduct daily business. The European Union is the PA's largest single donor, but the bloc has not donated any aid to the authority so far in 2021. Palestinian Prime Minister Mohamed Ishtayi has meanwhile told his cabinet several days ago that the PA hasn't either received any financial aid from the Arab countries for 2 years.
There's no doubt that the PA is going through a real and suffocating financial crisis. Its manifestations are evident. There's a budget deficit, an accumulation of debt, and delays in paying its obligations, the salaries, paying for the education, infrastructure, health, and all sections. It's undeniable that there is a clear decline in aid.
Along with the long-standing fiscal leakages that are contributing to the financial crisis, Israel continues to deduct millions of U.S. dollars every month from clearance revenue transfers. This is in response to the payments by the Palestinian Authority to the prisoners held in Israeli jails, their families, and the families of those killed by Israeli forces.
Taxes collected by Israel on behalf of the PA, including customs duties, constitute a major source of revenue for the Palestinian economy. Israel often uses the fund transfers as a bargaining chip in its volatile relationship with the PA. They do not want for the PA to have any strength. They want to use the money it deducts to keep control in a way or another on the PA.
Meanwhile, the World Bank called on donors to help reduce the budget deficit, saying that the financial situation remains fragile due to high public spending and very low external financing to the PA. At the end of the day, observers have expressed concern that the increasingly cash-strapped PA could face financial collapse. PA officials say the main reason behind the financial crisis is the lack of international and Arab donations to the Palestinians. Munakandil, Occupy Jamallah.
No end in sight to Saudi Arabia's military aggression against neighboring Yemen. According to Yemeni media, Saudi warplanes targeted an area east of the city of Hais in Hodeidah province, killing 3 civilians and injuring 7 more. Saudi Arabia staged a devastating war on Yemen in March 2015. Since then, tens of thousands of people, mostly civilians, have lost their lives. Millions more have been displaced. The years-long aggression has also targeted the Yemen's infrastructure, leaving the people in abject misery. The United Nations has called the situation in the country as the world's worst humanitarian crisis. The projections from Argentina's midterm parliament elections indicate the ruling coalition has lost control of Congress. President Alberto Fernandez's coalition is projected to drop from 41 to 35 seats in the 72-member Senate. More than 90% of the ballots have been counted. The conservative opposition is leading in most key regions, including the populous province of Buenos Aires. Nearly half of lower chamber seats were up for grabs, as well as one-third of Senate seats. Argentina has been hit with an economic crisis, with public discontent growing over rising poverty and inflation. The crisis has been escalated by the COVID pandemic in the past 2 years. Austria has become the first European Union member to announce fresh COVID restrictions for unvaccinated citizens amid a record spike in estate infections.
We have decided today that from tomorrow, at 12 a.m. on Monday, a lockdown will enter into force in Austria. It means movement restrictions for anyone older than 12. I must say we're not taking this step with a light heart, but unfortunately it is necessary.
The Chancellor is saying that unvaccinated people can only leave their homes for reasons like working or buying food. That would effectively put some 2 million people in lockdown, as around 35% of the Austrian population remains unvaccinated. Following the announcement, people gathered outside the Chancellor's office in capital Vienna to protest the measure. The EU is once again turning into a hotbed for the COVID outbreak. Several European countries have been posting higher figures over the past few weeks. That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful moment with IRIB English Radio.
Economic divide.
Tax evasion has become a norm for the rich, the wealthy, the CEOs, and the political figures. But why does this keep occurring? The world is boasting of a new tax scheme, a reform introduced by the U.S. Yet many of these evaders are from the U.S., using U.S. soil for tax evasion. Hi, I'm Kavit Ahle, and today's program will tell you everything you ever wanted to know about tax evasion and tax dodging. Coming up in today's program, tax evasion, what is it? Offshore tax havens. And the money, how does it end up there? Complex and loosely regulated tax system is the issue. Then, the U.S. increasingly becoming a center for tax evasion. We could also mention the UK. They promised protection of the assets of millionaires and billionaires through trust companies. And then we're going to take a look at something that is not really talked about when it comes to tax evasion, the ones that are being robbed of their rights, money that can go for rebuilding societies and communities, the money being robbed from Main Street and ordinary people. We'll give you some shocking examples.
Tax evasion has been around for a long time. There are laws meant to avoid the evasion, yet the practice continues. One group of countries stands out when it comes to tax evasion. The OECD, Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, represents 38 mostly wealthy Western governments, like the U.S. and the U.K., claims it has spent much of the last decade attempting to get agreements on rules that prevent tax evasion by wealthy individuals and major corporations. But the stats speak otherwise. OECD countries were responsible for 39% of the world's corporate tax abuse risks. But the UK clearly stands out. Some of the territories in the UK, like Jersey, Guernsey, and the Isle of Man, were responsible for 29% of the world's corporate tax abuse risks. The failure of combating tax evasion is evident when countries graded by the OECD as not harmful are responsible for 98% of the world's corporate tax abuse risks. So bad is the failure of preventing tax evasion that it has been recommended that the UN should take over the role of enforcing global tax rules.
In order to get an idea about the world of not paying taxes, it is necessary to make a differentiation here about what is legal and what is not. Now, tax avoidance is the use of legal methods to modify a corporation's financial situation to lower the amount of income tax liability. Tax evasion is the use of illegal methods to modify an individual or corporation's financial situation to lower the amount of income tax liability. Now, some examples of tax avoidance: giving to charity, investing in an individual retirement account, taking a child tax credit, and taking mortgage and tax deductions are some examples. Now, one way of tax avoidance is the use of what's called tax havens. A tax haven is a foreign country or corporation used to avoid or reduce income taxes, especially by investors from another country. There's also what's called an offshore deferral, the ability of multinational companies to avoid paying taxes on overseas profits through a potentially infinite delay of returning those profits to the U.S. Let's try to get an idea about all of this. We have our guest, Stavros Mavroidis, who's a Greek economist, works in the tradition of political economy, joining us. He's a professor of political economy at the Department of Social Policy of Pantheon University and was previously professor of political economy at the Department of Economics of the University of Macedonia. Stavros, welcome. Looking at the rich and powerful politicians, et cetera, people who obviously make a lot of money, corporations to people, they are using the U.S. As a tax destination of choice. Why has the U.S. And its states like South Dakota, Nevada, et cetera, become the tax destination of choice for people who want to hide their income or not pay taxes?
Well, let me try to clarify this point, this issue. The first, we have to bear in mind that the capitalist class, particularly in the West, and its political representatives are forfeiting the very rules they themselves set. Second, there is a long-run fusion between capitalists in the West and their political representatives. That is, the latter become capitalists and active capitalists become politicians. And of course, both of them perform the same illegal or semi-illegal practices. Now, coming to your question, the Anglo-Saxon countries, that is, the U.S. basically, but using the U.K. as a front in most of these operations.
All right. It's interesting how Stavros talks about semi-legal practices. Well, let's break down what Stavros actually said there, which is true in almost all countries, and we're going to focus on the U.S. here. Now, many wealthy Americans and billionaires actually donate money to politicians who favor government policies who are friendly to their business interests. And what do they get in return? Well, they get low taxes and less regulation. That's really important for businesses or for their business. So we're going to go back to Stavros and ask him about that. Stavros, what do you think? Many countries, again, using their money and storing them in offshore accounts.
So the Anglo-Saxon countries are facilitated in this by their dominance on the global financial system. Dollar is the main reserve currency, followed by euro.
This is our InfoNews section where we take a look at what's shaking and moving in the financial and economic world. Our first look is at what's called the FATF, the Financial Action Task Force. Now, this headline read, has the FATF actually become a weapon of coercion for the West? Why would that be referenced here? Well, because it concerns Turkey. Turkey is now included in the list of gray countries from the FATF, which poses the question then, is FATF impartial? Key question there. Moving on to our next topic that we chose, and that's hyperinflation. The Twitter CEO, actually Jack Dorsey, has issued what's been described as a cryptic warning that hyperinflation will soon happen in the United States. He said that it is going to change everything, that hyperinflation is very high and typically accelerating inflation, and it quickly erodes the real value of the local currency. Only time will tell. At this point, I think we're in that. And as I explained, this erosion of the real value of the local currency is where the focus is going to be. Moving on next to U.S. Recession, actually, many economists are saying that there is a recession in the U.S. already. There are worries about goods shortages, the labor market, and coronavirus, which has actually worsened dramatically. So at this point, these factors are playing into the fact that many are concluding that there's a recession in the U.S. already. Next topic, China's economy. We're looking at it somewhat stumbling, and that's a big worry, because if China's economy keeps stumbling, it won't just take down Beijing. The whole world will collapse with it. So obviously a huge concern. The Chinese President Xi Jinping is said that in order for that not to happen, he needs to strike a delicate balance between eliminating China's crushing debt and then maintaining consumer confidence. So a misstep could spur global chaos, both economic and political.
Listening to Economic Divide. The series looks at the financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
In this in-depth section, we have zoomed in on the United States and how it has become a tax evasion destination of choice. Now, this comes from a country that has long condemned and actually jailed people who have committed this crime. First, let's take a look at the extent of U.S. involvement. In terms of the number of companies that are involved here, called trust, you have about 205 of them, which are holding combined assets which are worth more than $1 billion. That's the amount or the value that they are holding. This includes nearly 30 trusts that are holding these assets linked to people or companies accused either of fraud, bribery, or human rights abuses. Now, the immediate question that arises here, aren't U.S. authorities, like the U.S. Justice Department and the likes, aware that this is going on? And this is where the situation actually gets interesting. Let's take a look at the trust industry as a whole. Now, I mentioned a trust company. Trust company is part of the trust industry, which functions by sheltering assets and by promising levels of protection and secrecy that rival or surpass those offered in overseas tax havens. This shield is near absolute. That means it has protected the industry from oversight and has allowed U.S. states to become destinations to hide money. Now, so far, the states that are luring in wealth, here's a map of the United States. Let's take a look at what those states are. In this case in point, there are five of them: Alaska, Delaware, Nevada, and New Hampshire. But South Dakota, that one right there, that's the one that has become the favorite. It is proud, actually, to have assets from, believe it or not, 54 countries. These are clients from 54 countries in terms of assets. And then you have $360 million, which is the amount that they're holding. That has quadrupled over the past decade. One of the largest trust companies in the state, the South Dakota Trust Company. But why South Dakota? Now, this really goes back to a man by the name of Jonathan Blattmacher. He's the one right over here, okay? He's a lawyer, and he's the U.S., what's been called, or how he's been described, the U.S. tax evasion specialist. He's the brainchild behind insulating the assets of trusts from taxes and creditors. Okay, so how do trust companies then get away with this? This is really the key question here. Well, year after year, this is what happens. These trusts would pitch legislative proposals, which then, with little opposition, the state legislators would turn the proposals into laws, which in turn protected the trust from creditors, from taxing authorities, from foreign governments. Then the trust, one of the things that it actually, the laws have done is it would protect the claims of future creditors, as you can see over here. So you can see how far-reaching this proposal by the legislators, which turned into law, goes. So let's fast forward to today. The greatest irony of it all, then, is when it is the U.S. that has proposed a system of so-called reforms so that people and corporations pay their fair share of taxes, and this is while the U.S. itself is a source for not paying taxes.
That global minimum tax would end the race to the bottom in corporate taxation and ensure fairness for the middle class and working people in the U.S. and around the world.
All right, joining us to give us an idea behind why this tax evasion phenomenon has accelerated in the United States is Michael Harris. He's the financial editor of Veterans Today. He's also a podcast radio show host of The Short End of the Stick. He's been in the manufacturing, financial, and technology sectors for 30 years. Mike, welcome. The U.S. becoming the largest tax haven. Tell us how these states within the U.S., like South Dakota, for example, are getting away with it. You have these secrecy laws that have been enacted, and basically more and more over the years, the U.S. to have become the tax evasion destination of choice.
Well, in the USA, we've seen a long-term influence of organized crime in our government. This is pretty widespread. We see it in our corrupt judiciary. We see it in our bought and paid for, bribed congressmen and senators. We see it virtually every aspect where the U.S. has lost its moral compass. And now the U.S. has turned itself into a country that is for sale to the highest bidder. So when you have the changes in these tax laws, they're merely doing what is asked of them by the drug cartels and by the people who are involved in human trafficking, arms merchants, all sorts of illicit sex trafficking, things along these lines. These are the people who are making the money. The U.S. Gutted itself industrially by under Bill Clinton by signing these treaties, NAFTA, GATT, led China into the WTO. So a lot of this is driven by the fact that people still want money, they still need money to live, and so they're going along by tolerating this organized crime, because that's the way to make a living now. I mean, the average guy on the street has a hard time. There aren't any high-paying middle-class jobs anymore. They've all been exported to China.
All right, time to take a look at what's being said on social media about tax evasion. And it had one surprise, which is consistent with recent findings of numerous reports, which indicated that the U.S., as we have said, has become this destination of choice for tax evasions. All right, this tweet, for example: if the EU and the OECD are serious about tackling international money laundering and tax evasion, then the U.S. must be addressed. Obviously, the point that we're trying to make here. And this tweet was worth looking at also. It says, I'm not interested in hearing what we can or cannot pay for when the top 1% evade $163 billion in taxes every year. Okay, well, let's do a facts check. According to the IRS chief in the U.S., tax cheats actually cost the U.S. $1 trillion per year. Now, he said the so-called tax gap has surged in the last decade. The last official estimate from the IRS was that an average of $441 billion per year went unpaid from the years 2011 to 2013. And most of the unpaid taxes are the result of evasion by the wealthy and large corporations. Let's see what is being said about tax evasion in Europe. Now, we looked at the UK for our search here, and this is what we came up with. This person says that foreign assets held are a majority in the UK. And then Ireland, in third place, comes Cayman Islands, which is used as shell company for tax evasion, Australia, and then number five is Brazil. This viewer makes a case and point about the real reason why the UK has actually left the EU, and it's because of the new tax evasion law. The viewer blames Tory greed, their reluctance to tax themselves, and the wealthy. And it says that it's endangering the people of the UK as a result. When it comes to you, if you would like to share a story with us, please let us know. While you're at it, please drop us a line and tell us how we're doing so we can actually improve the program. And now it's time to find out more about tax evasion from Mahdi.
Hey, Kaveh. Thank you. Well, tax and financial systems are powerful tools that are supposed to create a just society. Tax revenues should be spent on improving people's lives, give equal weight to the needs of everyone, but unfortunately, it's not.
The financial centers of the world, like the US, Europe, leaders are able to funnel and siphon money away and hide it in these jurisdictions through the use of anonymous companies.
Under pressure from corporate giants and the super rich, governments have created systems that prioritize wealthiest over everyone else. How have they done that? Financial secrecy, tax havens embedded into the global economy. What happens as a result? Inequality and corruption is created, resulting in a corrupt system that undermines democracy. Before we actually dive into the subject at hand, let me ask a question. Are authorities aware of tax evasion? Sure they are. Here's the IMF on that matter.
It is a big concern that we have a large amount of tax shifting, tax avoidance, countries sending money to tax havens, and that's reducing the tax base from which governments can collect revenues and do the necessary social and economic spending that's required.
So, there's your answer. Yet, the game goes on. Banks are also guilty of helping the corporations and the wealthy dodge taxes, like in the case of HSBC.
I'd like to put on the record an apology from both myself and from Douglas for the unacceptable events that took place at our private bank in Switzerland.
Well, just to be clear, what are you apologising for?
The lack of controls and the practices which now, judged with the benefit of hindsight, we would not be at all comfortable with if they were happening today.
The amount of money that the world misses out on tax evasion is shocking. One source, Tax Justice Network, reported that countries are losing a total of over $427 billion in tax each year to international corporate tax abuse and private tax evasion. But a closer look at the report reveals that the numbers are even higher. Multinational corporations paid billions of dollars less in tax by shifting $1.38 trillion worth of profit out of the countries where they were placed into tax havens. Corporate tax rates either were low or didn't exist there. They placed a total of $10 trillion in financial assets offshore. When it comes down to it, rich countries are responsible for almost all global tax losses. Which countries, you ask? Well, we covered that earlier in the program, but it is worth mentioning again. British territory Cayman is responsible for 16.5% of global tax losses. That's equal to over $70 billion. The UK accounts for 10% That is over $42 billion. The Netherlands, 8.5%, which is over $36 billion. Luxembourg, 6.5%, that's over $27 billion. And finally, the US, 5.53%, which is over $23 billion. We have used the Tax Justice Network as a source for some of our data, and we felt it's necessary to relay the sentiment of Alex Cobham, chief executive of the Tax Justice Network. He said, a global tax system that loses over $427 billion a year is not a broken system. It's a system programmed to fail. Our governments have programmed the global tax system to prioritize the desires of the wealthiest corporations and individuals over the needs of everybody else. Wouldn't it be great if we can get a politician to be confronted with tax evasion questions? This was the case with Iceland's former prime minister. Pay close attention to how he breaks down after tax documents showed he and his wife used an offshore firm to allegedly hide million-dollar investments.
Have you or did you have any connections yourself to an offshore company?
Myself? No. Well, the Icelandic companies, what's it called? The it's an unusual question for for an Icelandic politician to get. It's almost like being accused of something. But I have never hidden any of my assets.
Mr. Prime Minister, what can you tell me about a company called Vintris?
Well, it's a company, if I recall correctly, which is associated with one of the companies that I was on a board of. So now I'm starting to feel a bit strange about these questions, because it's like you are accusing me of something.
So what do you think? Guilty? Not guilty? You be the judge. But in case you don't understand the gravity of the situation, the following clip may jolt you in seeing what tax evasion is all about.
The reality is not what you believe, that your prime minister has the power to decide on the future of your country. The power is hidden here.
So when the UK Chancellor of the Exchequer, Rishi Sunak, comes out and says the UK is committed to a global minimum corporate tax of at least 15%, rallying behind a US-backed plan, it should be taken with a grain of salt.
What this deal does is ensure that with a minimum rate of tax that we can make sure there's a level playing field for countries and companies wherever they're operating, ensuring that they pay the right tax in the right places at the right time.
Please write to us and let us know what you think about the program. Any questions and comments are welcome. The following are our links and addresses. From me, Mahdi, it's goodbye until next week.
Tax evasion, which is different than tax avoidance, we need to make sure that that is clear to you. It's going to persist. Why? Because the law allows it to do so. It's as simple as that. But what is the downside of this? Well, it's how the rich and the corporations, how they're getting away with it and becoming richer as a result. Now, they're doing that at the expense of their citizens. Money that they're avoiding, well, it can go for things like infrastructure, for schools, for hospitals, and things of that nature in general. And in this age of COVID-19, where every penny counts, tax evaders need to be stopped. Of course, that's a huge challenge. Well, that does it for this edition of Economic Divide. It was great having you on board, and we do look forward to any comments or questions that you may have. For now, it's goodbye from me, Kavit Tapwai. I'm looking forward to seeing you next time.
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except him, and he has enjoined kindness to parents.
For humanity.
Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musawi.
A'udhu billahi min ash-shaytan ar-rajim. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Brothers and sisters, dear listeners, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to IRIB English Radio, and you are listening to the program For Humanity. We are looking at Amir al-Mu'mineen's vision when it comes to practicing social justice amongst the Muslims of his time or the people of his time. And we can see that very clear in the words and the actions of Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullahi alayhi. One of the first things that the Imam alayhi salam did, and his approach when he went to Iraq to be the governor or the Khalifa, is that he rejected the division based on race or ethnicity. That was something that was rejected by Amir al-Mu'mineen. And even the nationalists throughout the Arabian kind of culture, where the nobles, those who have noble origin, they would prefer themselves over others, he did that, made no difference to him at all. He says, "Man abta'a bihi amaluh lam yusra' bihi nasabuh." When it comes to your actions, if you don't do any good actions, your lineage, your origin, whether it's a noble family or not, will not do you any good. So one should not be seeking anything from Amir al-Mu'mineen based on his nobility or origin, and trying to have this division. So he tried to eliminate and eradicate this kind of notion between people, that they are from a noble family and these guys are not. And then he says, "Wadhalilu andi aziz." Those who are oppressed, those who are being humiliated in society, to me they are honored. In my presence they are honored. Hatta akhud al-haqq lah, until I take their rights for them. Because they are of, a less noble family or not known people, and people look down at them, he says, I will take their rights for them. To me, they are honored, because they are, at the end of the day, human beings, mu'mineen. So I will take their rights. And he says, وَالْقَوِيُّ عَنْدِي ضَعِيفٌ. And those who are in power, those who think they are, strong and have, things to fight with and things to bring forward. I'm of this family. I am of this race. I'm an Arab. I'm from Quraysh. He's like, this kind of strength that you have, to me, it is nothing. He says, وَالْقَوِيُّ عَنْدِي ضَعِيفٌ. Those who think they are strong, in my sight, to me, they are weak. حَتَّى أَأْخُذَ الْحَقَّ مِنْهُ. Until I take the right from them. So you see clearly Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi saying, I will stand with the truth. I will stand with justice. I will stand with fairness and equality. And I will not make any differences between people based on their race or ethnicity. To him, it meant absolutely nothing. And then he made it clear and he says, أَطْهَرُ النَّاسِ أَعْرَاقَ أَحْسَنَهُمْ أَخْلَاقَ. When it comes to the purest people, when it comes to races, the purest form of race is ethics. If you have good ethics, if you got good morals, then you are the best of people. And then he says, وَأَفْضَلُ النَّاسِ أَنْفَعَهُمْ لِلنَّاسِ. And the best amongst people is the one who is more beneficial to people. Those are the ones he respected. Those are the ones who thought they were doing the right thing. Not because of your lineage, not because of your family name, not because of your title. To Amir al-Mu'mineen, it meant absolutely nothing. And he says, I will take the right from those who think they are powerful, and I will give it to those who are weak. Let's continue after a short break, inshallah.
Dear listeners, you are listening to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can send us your emails, comments, and questions at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program For Humanity, coming to you from IRIB English Radio. Now, so the concept of fairness and equality in the sight of Amir al-Mu'mineen, salamullah alayhi, it rejects race and ethnicity from whatever aspect it is, positive or negative. It's completely rejected in his sight. But he used to make it as a way to connect people, as a way to bring people together, not divide them. So he says, As-sabiqu khamsa, those who came first are five. Fa'ana sabiqu al-Arab, for I am the first of the Arabs to be a believer in the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. Was-Salman sabiqu al-Furs, and Salman is the first amongst or from the Persian. Was-Suhayb سابق الروم, and from the Romans we have Suhaib. وبلال سابق الحبشة, and Bilal is the first from Abyssinia. وخباط سابق النبط, and خباط is the first that comes from Nabt, which is in Syria. So he says, these people, me, Salman, Suhaib al-Rumi, Bilal, we were from different ethnicities, different cultures, different races, yet we came all together under one banner, and we treat each other similarly, and we treat each other fairly, and we treat each other with fairness. So if you guys want to have any of this notion between you that, oh, I'm better than him, I am white and he's black, or I'm Arab, he's Persian, he said that made no difference between us, because both Persians, Arabs, Romans, Abyssinia, and Sham, they all came together. They were all the same. They were treated the same. For example, they didn't look at Bilal and said, well, he's black, for example, from Abyssinia. We, and blacks are slaves, therefore we will not, you know, we will look at him different. Or, for example, Salman, because he's a Persian, therefore we're going to treat him differently. Or Suhaib, because he was a Roman, therefore we treat him differently. Absolutely the contrary. Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi, and the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi, he treated them with fairness and equality. In fact, it's not the Prophet, it's not Amir al-Mu'mineen, that's just the teaching of Islam. That's what Islam teaches. Islam says no races, no ethnicities, no nothing. You're all the same in the eyes and the sight of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Akramakum andallah atqakum, the most honored amongst you, human beings in general, is the more pious. If you are pious, the higher you are in piety, the better you are in the sight of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Not your wealth, not your lineage, not your family, not your title, nothing. And Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi, and he had to deal with this concept heavily during his rule, because people were still living in the dark ages. They still have the old back pagan mentality, where it is based on tribal mentality, that my tribe is better than other tribes. And the biggest names that we have in history, those who call themselves companions of the Prophet, he had to deal with them and this backward mentality, where they were asking for a lot of things that wasn't theirs, and he had to stop against them, to the point where some of them decided to go to war with him because they could not handle and accept the justice of Amir al-Mu'mineen and the fairness and equality of Amir al-Mu'mineen. they could not handle it, so they had to wage war. And first of which was the Battle of the Camel, and then Safin, and then Nahrawan, until they had to kill Amir al-Mu'mineen in order to get in order for them to get their ways. Thank you for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Salli ya Rabbi ala Taha al-Amin, rahmatin awsaltahu lil alamin, wa ala ahin nabiyyi ajma'in, fa bihim arjuka ahsin khatmina.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.